Buonasera, vorrei parlare in italiano, ma non posso. E quindi I will speak in English, but slowly. And I have come to Italy to celebrate the 100th anniversary of two major discoveries in astronomy that both have to do with this place. This is the Harvard College Observatory, the way it looked in the 1800s. And you can see that there are two domes. Those were the telescope domes. And the other building that doesn't have a dome is where the astronomer lived. And so from very early times, the astronomer's wife, his sister, his daughter would be brought in to help with the work. And so there were numerous women working in this place, mostly for free. And they did so well that they inspired later directors to actually hire women. At that time, a computer was a person's job. It wasn't a machine. And computers at observatories calculated the orbits of comets. Various measurements had to be reduced mathematically. And women showed themselves very capable of doing that work. And I was attracted to this story because of all these women at Harvard, which was an all-male school and was never known for being friendly to women. But there they were. And the person most responsible for hiring women from outside the observatory family was Edward Pickering, who became the director in the 1870s. And he was a photographer. He was really trained in physics, and he wanted to photograph the stars as a new way of studying them. Because when you used a camera and had a long exposure, stars would appear that could not be seen by the human eye, even the very best observers. So this was a revolutionary war. Galaxies, globular clusters, whatever might be. And then people can look at these glass plate photographs and spend time during the day. They don't have to work at night. And they can make measurements at their leisure and really try to make a catalog of all the stars in the sky. This was also the time when spectroscopy had come into use. And people realized that if they could look at the spectra of the stars, they could start to see what elements the stars were made of. And they could also tell whether the stars were moving toward us or away from us by the way the spectra were shifted toward the red or the blue. But there was no color photography yet. So the very best stellar spectra looked like this. And most of the plates looked like this. So each one of these tiny little smudges is the spectrum of a star. This is a penny, just a coin to give you a sense of scale. And what Pickering asked the women to do was to look at the spectra and try to determine a pattern in them and group the stars into categories. So there would be a classification system for the stars, similar to what Linnaeus was doing for animals and plants. And the first woman to create a classification system was Wilhelmina Fleming. She was a Scottish immigrant, and her first job at the observatory was actually as a maid servant. And the Pickerings realized how intelligent she was, so they moved her into the observatory part of the building and taught her how to look at these glass plates. And she, at the time, she had taken this work because she was pregnant, and her husband had left her, and the Pickerings offered to send her home to Scotland to have her baby, and promised her that if she came back, she would have a job. So she did that. She came back, and she classified 10,000 stars, and her collection, her classification was published by the observatory, and she was given credit for doing that work. So these glass plate photographs were taken all night long by the astronomers at several telescopes. So as time went on, the number of plates rose into the thousands. And so a whole new building was erected just to hold the glass plate collection. You can see the old observatory building at the back. This is the dome of the big telescope. And this is what they called the brick building, because it was made of bricks, because they were afraid that a fire would burn down a wooden building and destroy all of these valuable photographs. At first, the women who worked there were family. And then they were just bright young women looking for jobs. But soon, the graduates of the women's colleges started to come to work at the observatory. And this person, Antonia Maury, was the first really college-educated woman, and she also worked on a classification system. And so now you can see, here's Mrs. Fleming at the back. Now she's in a supervisor role. She's in charge of hiring and directing and training all the others. Here is Antonia Maury. And this is how they looked at the plates. They would put them in this kind of frame, and there was a mirror at the bottom that would catch the light from the windows and reflect up through the glass. So they had good lighting. And then they would use a magnifying glass. This woman is actually using a kind of microscope that was modified for this purpose. And so they worked in teams. One would be looking at the plate and saying out loud what she needed written down, and her partner would write it in the logbook. And here's Edward Pickering standing at the back, not doing much, but we have a lot to thank him for. This woman also came as a college graduate, and she had real experience using a telescope. So she was the first of the women who was not only studying the glass plates, but was observing certain types of stars, especially variable stars. So her name was Annie Jump Cannon. And she took the work of Mrs. Fleming and Miss Morey. This is one of her typical plates. So again, all the tiny smudges are spectra of stars. And then she could write on the plate in colored ink and assign numbers to the objects. So for the records, she would say which type of star corresponded with each number. And those of you who have studied astronomy know that the way the stars are classified today, there are letters of the alphabet. There's O and B and A, and all of that comes from this work. So Mrs. Fleming put her stars in alphabetical order. When Miss Cannon came along, she understood more about what the patterns meant, so she changed the order. And it's no longer in alphabetical order, but it's what we have. So in order to cover the whole sky, there had to be an observatory in the southern hemisphere. And so some Harvard astronomers went to South America, and they chose this site near the town of Arequipa in Peru, and they built an observatory. So one of the buildings really looks like an observatory, but most of the buildings have telescopes, and they have roofs that slide off when it's time to observe the stars. This is the telescope that was in the dome, and this telescope was a gift from a woman who got very interested in this work, and she agreed to pay the full cost of buying this telescope for Pickering to use in the southern hemisphere. So now glass plates are being taken every night, north and south, and they're all being sent back to the Harvard Observatory for these women to analyze and make discoveries from. So Henrietta Swan Leavitt was the first name in this group that I learned. And I learned it because her work continues to really have relevance today. So she was not looking at spectra. She was mostly trying to determine the brightness of stars and to set up a sequence of stars that could be used for comparison as standards of certain brightness. And then other stars could be compared to those. And she was also looking at variable stars and trying to measure exactly how much they changed in brightness over time. And so these were instruments that she used. These were called fly spankers. Come una mosca. Che assomiglia a una, come si dice, a fly swatter. But a fly spanker, because you couldn't kill a fly with this. You could only spank it. So these were little pieces of glass, and there were images of stars on them that had been given a certain brightness, and then you could move this over a plate and compare the stars to the stars on the plate and then assign brightness. It was very tedious, difficult work, not for everyone. But Henrietta Leavitt excelled at it. She kept very careful, neat records. These have all been preserved. You can see a lot of them online. They wrote in the record books, they wrote in pencil. Sometimes they took a picture of one of the plates and pasted it right in to make it clear what they were talking about. And these were the objects that really made her famous. So this group of stars is the Small Magellanic Cloud, which we don't see here in the north, but it is a well-known feature of the southern sky. And she was looking for variable stars in this small galaxy. They didn't know it was a separate galaxy at the time, but they just saw it as a big cluster of stars. And she figured that since all of these were close together, the stars that looked brighter really were brighter. And as she followed these variable stars, she noticed that the very brightest ones took the longest time to cycle through their changes. You can imagine the attention paid to notice something like that. And because it seemed like a pattern, she made a graph of it, and she was able to prove that that was indeed the case. There was a pattern, and the brightest stars took the longest. And other people immediately saw this as a way to measure distance through space, because this type of variable star existed nearby. So you could look at the brightness of the nearby ones, get a matching one that had the same period of change, and then by its comparative brightness, you could get a sense of how far away it was. And so the first estimates of the distance to the Small Magellanic Cloud were made on the basis of her discovery. So here are Miss Leavitt and Miss Cannon. They were both world famous in their own lifetimes. They corresponded with astronomers all over the world. Miss Cannon traveled a lot and went to astronomy meetings in Europe. Miss Leavitt was never strong physically. She was ill a lot of the time and was not able to travel the way Miss Cannon was. But an interesting result of the number of women working there was that yet another wealthy outsider woman provided money to the observatory just to bring in new women and really train them as astronomers so that they could go work at other observatories. And they were called the Pickering Fellows. And several of them are gathered together here. And when Pickering died, a new director came in, Harlow Shapley, and he felt that the observatory was doing great work in astronomy, but it wasn't really training the next generation of astronomers. And he wanted to set up a graduate program in astronomy. He also conducted his own studies. He was interested in these globular clusters of stars. And he was using them. He could see them all around the sky. And he used Miss Leavitt's idea of gauging the distance by the variable stars to map out where these clusters were. And he created this map. So on this map, the sun is over here. But the center of all the action is over here. So this helped him measure the size of the Milky Way and helped him realize that our solar system is not at the center, but it's out at the edges of the Milky Way. And he thought that was a great way to remind humans that we're not so important. But he wanted to start this graduate program, and the only money he had were these Pickering fellowships. So all of the first graduate students in astronomy at Harvard were women. And they came from these women's colleges. And this person at the bottom is Cecilia Payne, who came from England. Because although she got interested in astronomy in England, she was told that she probably had no future in her own country, that she would be much better off if she could get to America and work at the Harvard Observatory. And she was also interested in studying the glass plates to really understand the composition of the stars. She was the first person at the observatory who understood anything about atomic theory and what the spectra were really showing. So Shapley encouraged her to work toward a PhD, which she did. She was the first person to earn a PhD in astronomy at Harvard. And in her dissertation, which was published by the observatory 100 years ago, she said that although you can see many different elements in the stars, they are mostly hydrogen. Hydrogen is a million times more prevalent in the stars than anything else. And this was unbelievable. I mean, no one expected that. And she was advised not to make the point too strongly. So she said in her thesis that it might be mistaken, but nevertheless, this was her finding. And it took only 4 years for the rest of the world to be convinced that she was right. Meanwhile, Miss Leavitt's variable stars had helped Shapley measure the size of the Milky Way. And it was so big that many people thought the Milky Way was the universe and that the spiral nebula that could be seen were objects within the Milky Way. This is Edwin Hubble working on Mount Wilson in California. And he used her technique to look at the Andromeda Nebula. And he saw in it some of these variable stars. Here's his famous plate where he had thought one of the stars up here, he thought it was a nova. So he had written N for nova. And then as he watched over time, it changed. And he realized it was variable. And then he was able to measure the distance to this object, and it was far beyond what had been established as the borders of the Milky Way. So that was another 1925 discovery, the extent of the universe. Pretty big deal. But there, when you look at these pictures of these women, there's a sense that there's something cute or quaint about it. They don't look like they're doing science. And this happened to me when I was writing the book, that I kept being surprised by what they had done. And that bothered me. I mean, why should I be surprised? My mother was a scientist. I went to a special school for science. I'm interested in science. I knew women scientists. But still, I had picked up all of these negative ideas about women that got in my way. So it was a moment of awakening. And I wanted to tell more stories about science to show people how common it is for women not only to work in science, but to make major discoveries. So that brought me to Madame Curie, not immediately, because at first I thought, she's too famous, and it's too different, and we always see her alone. But then I found out that there were 45 women who worked at one time or another in her laboratory. Why? Because they saw her as a model, as a practitioner of a new science, radioactivity, which was a word that she invented. And they went to her hoping that she would let them work in her lab. And she did. And many of them then went back to their own countries to become either the first female university professors or the first to do research in and teach this new science. One of the things she did was to discover two new elements. She too was very interested in spectroscopy, but the elements she discovered, she got in such tiny quantities that they could barely look at their spectra. So radium and polonium were her two elements credited to her. And her husband, they worked together. But then he died quite young, and she took over the lab, took over his professorship, and became even more famous. So she was famous for winning a Nobel Prize with him. Later she won another one by herself. And so she was an example and a magnet for other women. And she still functions that way today. This is Fabiola Giannotti, who is the first woman director of CERN. And she's, in fact, serving her second term as director. Completely unprecedented. And she is a talented musician. I have watched online a piano concert she gave at CERN with Yo-Yo Ma playing the cello. And she had to make a choice between music and science. And she read a biography of Madame Curie and decided she would study physics. So, as we now know, all the elements come from the stars. And the periodic table, which was unfinished in Madame Curie's time, was not completed till after her death, this version of the table shows the origins, the beginning with the elements that were forged in the Big Bang to others created in stars like our sun, and then the ones that require a massive collision of dying stars. And as Carl Sagan famously said, we are all star stuff. So that brings me from astronomy to radioactivity and back to astronomy.